Keep up to date with the past on the 100 Years Ago Show with Mark Stein.
The fascist era begins. Three prime ministers on trial and a castle burns in Ireland. It's October 1922.
100 years from today.
News update. Just a few days ago, His Britannic Majesty appointed a new Prime Minister in London. Now the King of Italy has done the same in Rome, but in very different circumstances. Benito Mussolini, the 39-year-old leader of the nation's fascist movement, arrived in the Italian capital just before 11 in the morning, went straight to see King Victor Emmanuel III at the Quirinale Palace for an hour, and from there proceeded to the Savoy Hotel, where he took to the balcony of his suite and addressed thousands of supporters in the street below. "The fascisti are completely victorious," Signor Mussolini told them, proclaiming the dawn of the era fascista. Italy's 60th prime minister since 1870 continued, "I have come to Rome not only to give Italy a ministry, but a true government. In a few hours, you will have such a government. Long live King Victor Emmanuel. Long live victorious Italy. Long live the fascisti." It has been a tumultuous few days across Italy as the march on Rome began. The leader of the fascists remained in Milan, but his men mobilized everywhere and took possession of key cities around the country. Florence, Pisa, Cremona were among the first to fall. Luigi Facta, prime minister for just 8 months, asked the king to declare martial law. His majesty refused on the advice of his generals, who warned him that their men might not obey orders to fire on the fascists. Signor Facta slept on it and in the morning tendered to the monarch his and his ministers immediate resignations. The king then invited Signor Mussolini to come to Rome to discuss the political situation and offered to send a special train to collect him from Milan. The Duce, as he is styled by his supporters, refused the offer, apparently because he was wary of a trap. He thought he would be arrested or even shot dead. He insisted that King Victor Emmanuel's aide-de-camp, General Arturo Cittadini, send a telegram putting His Majesty's invitation in writing, and he took the additional precaution of dictating the words himself. With the telegram in his pocket, he and five aides went to Milan's railway station and boarded the regular overnight train to the capital. The following morning, on the outskirts of Rome, his entourage suggested Mr. Mussolini leave the train and enter the city on horseback. He declined their advice on the grounds that he did not wish to appear ridiculous. Instead, he remained on the train and went straight from the station to the palace. There were conflicting rumours as to how the fascist strongman greeted his sovereign. One version says he introduced himself with the words, "Your Majesty, I bring you the Italy of Vittorio Veneto." Netto, a reference to the famous battle in the last days of the World War that brought victory on the Italian front and the downfall of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Another version says that Signor Mussolini's first words were, "Your Majesty will forgive my attire. I have come from the battlefield," which does not appear to be correct. Whatever the truth, the king found him, quote, "a man of purpose," and invited him to take office as Italy's youngest ever prime minister.
Non più ne avrei finita, resti ancora Margherita, di splendore più possente, solleviamo al parapate che ci illumini il cammino nell'amore, nella pace, sia la vera libertà.
A few hours after his balcony speech, Benito Mussolini returned to the palace to be sworn in as premier, as foreign minister, and as minister of the interior, along with the rest of his cabinet. Signor Mussolini was then driven to his new seat of power, the office of prime minister, where Luigi Facta was still clearing out his effects. The man who had supplanted him, not through election or parliamentary manoeuvring, but through sheer street power, then ordered Signor Facta to be escorted from the premises, but with an 11-strong fascist honour guard, as a mark of respect for the loss of Mr. Factor's son in the late war. It hardly seems worth reporting the latest news out of Switzerland, where, unlike Italy and so many other nations, they still do things the old way. Elections have been held for the National Council. The Free Democratic Party has won a plurality of seats, and so its leader, Adolf von Steiger, will return as federal chancellor. The messy aftermath of the Great War continues in the wake of its humiliating defeat by Turkey and the troops of Mustafa Kemal. The Greek army has completed its withdrawal from eastern Thrace, and that historic region is now firmly in the hands of its enemies. Meanwhile, in Athens, a new regime seeks to punish those responsible for the catastrophe. The government has constituted an extraordinary military tribunal for the so-called Trial of the Six. Never before have three former prime ministers found themselves simultaneously in the dock. Dimitrios Gunaris, Nikolaos Stratos, and Petros Protopapadakis. Alongside them are the former foreign minister Georgios Baltazis and the two senior military commanders who led Greece to the loss of Asia Minor, generals Georgios Hatzianestis and Xenophon Strategos. All are charged with treason, and all, if found guilty, will face execution. Southern Rhodesia is a British Crown colony in Africa, but its large population of white settlers sees itself as somewhat more analogous to a small dominion such as Newfoundland or New Zealand. The Legislative Council was elected just 2 years ago on a mandate to gain the colony full responsible government. London established a commission under the Earl Buxton. Until 1920, the Governor-General of South Africa. The Buxton Commission decided to offer Southern Rhodesians a choice between full self-government or becoming a province of South Africa. The result is unambiguous. 40.57% of voters chose union with South Africa. 59.43% preferred responsible government, which London is now expected to grant. It has been 3 centuries since a castle arose on the banks of the 6 Mile Water River in County Antrim. The owner, Viscount Massarine, is the deputy leader of the Senate and parliamentary secretary in Northern Ireland, and he was giving a small party at Antrim Castle when it was noticed in the early hours of the morning that the ancient edifice was on fire. Lord Massarine's guests were able to escape, but a maid died in the inferno. The castle is now a ruin, and local opinion is in no doubt that it was arson by the Irish Republican Army. You can't do the Mexican hat dance if the bailiffs have seized your hat. In the United States, Mexico has closed its consulate in New York City following the decision by a judge in the Supreme Court of Rockland County to attach all Mexican government funds in New York banks and all Mexico's property throughout the state. The position of the Mexican state is that the New York court's decision is a breach of its immunity as a sovereign government. In Washington, Secretary of State Hughes immediately wired Governor Miller in Albany and indicated that he agreed with the Mexicans. The seizure arises from a $1 million lawsuit filed by the Oliver American Trading Company over its railroad operations south of the border during the Revolutionary period and since.
Love her by radio. You will find it radio. If you want to reach your heart's desire, you won't have to send her word by wire. You never buy her love her by radio. Even when you're all alone, think of all the fun that they can have both night and day, listening in to what the lovey-doveys have to say. I'll bet the things they hear would make a bachelor's hair turn gray when you love her by the radio phone. Love her by radio.
You can now love her by radio to the sound of American football. Although whether that will prove quite so gradio, it might be best to establish with your sweetheart ahead of time. Nevertheless, the first nationally broadcast football game has been transmitted by station KYW in Chicago and WEAF in New York City. It was a showdown in the Windy City between the Princeton University Tigers and the University of Chicago Maroons, both teams unbeaten. The Maroons had an 18-7 lead in the fourth quarter, and then Princeton rallied and came back to thrill radio listeners by winning 21-18. We all know Charles Dickens' famous novel, Oliver Twist, but do you want to see it picturized with actors' facial gestures replacing the great author's immortal lines? Apparently so. Critics and audiences are raving about Oliver Twist, the new photoplay directed by Frank Lloyd and starring the greatest child actor in the world, Jackie Coogan, as the celebrated London lad, with Lon Chaney in the role of Fagin. The greatest film triumph of the decade, cheers the Wyoming County Times, while the studio itself prefers to ballyhoo the picture with the approval of the chairman of the Motion Picture Producers and Directors of America. Quote, 8 great reels that make you ask for more. Will Hayes says Jackie Coogan films are the sort the world needs. From Gounod's Romeo and Juliet, Rita Fornia as Stefano, one of dozens of roles she sang with the Metropolitan Opera over the last decade and a half. Rita Fornia was born Regina Newman, the daughter of a San Francisco wholesale jeweler. In 1890, at the age of 12, she attended Adelina Patti's concert in the city and decided that she too would like to be an opera singer. Her father eventually permitted her to move to New York to pursue her dream. Rita Rita Fornia in Faust. That was a grand success for her when she sang it with her dear friend Geraldine Farrar and the great Enrico Caruso at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. Miss Fornia had trained as a coloratura, but her voice darkened and lowered, and she settled into mezzo roles. New York has been blessed with some of the greatest voices in this new century, and the girl from San Francisco never became a grand diva, but she was never out of work. 6 months ago, she triumphed at the Met as Suzuki in Madame Butterfly and then retired due to ill health. She was visiting her sister in Paris when she was taken grievously ill. A great American voice is stilled. Rita Fornia is dead at 44. And that's the way of the world, October 1922.
100 years from today, 100 years from today.
The 100 Years Ago Show is a production of Markstein Enterprises and O'Kill Media. All rights reserved.